This guy is anything but a great American. He has the opportunity to be a role model for all of our boys over in the Middle East. Instead of that, this man is a complete mercenary.
America has gone soft, not only physically, but soft in the head. I will be the World Wrestling Federation champion.
Hello and welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast. Filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with blast processing, we chronologically critique the Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view. This is your host, the immortal patriot, Jay Hunter, accompanied as always by Stephen George Washington, V1.
How's it going?
And Benedict Arnold OSC.
Whoa.
It's Stars and Stripes Forever. It's WrestleMania 7. Take it away.
Champion, Sergeant Slaughter versus the immortal Hulk Hogan. Face to face, WrestleMania.
Stars and Stripes Forever, WrestleMania 7. It's March 24th, 1991. Alright, let's get this out of the way. This is not the LA Memorial Coliseum with over 100,000 fans. This is the LA Sports Arena from LA, California with 15,200 fans.
Is that all?
Yes.
It looked a lot bigger than that, I'd say. I thought it would have been about 25,000.
It's fantastic work by Kevin Dunn. Always makes the most of the crowd there. Not a sellout, so we got 1,500 empty seats. WrestleMania. Anyway, they paid $722,000 at the gate, and there were 400,000 TVs tuned in at home.
Not bad.
The True Story of WrestleMania DVD. When they go to WrestleMania 7, they say Sergeant Slaughter is there, obviously, and he's like, listen, I was getting so much heat. We actually got bomb threats to the LA Memorial Coliseum, and so we had to move across the road.
Where they could never have bombed us.
It's too far away. It's because their ticket sales were so low.
Sorry, just on the point of the potential bomb threats. Considering he was an Iraqi sympathizer, what this would have meant that it would have been like an American threatening to bomb America.
Including Hulk Hogan. Just whack him with a tire iron after he leaves the show in the car park.
Announcers initially are Gorilla Monsoon and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And WWF would play musical chairs all night with the colour commentary seat. Another colossal 14 match card tonight. Oh, you're loving it, aren't you?
Where was it written that we need 14 matches at WrestleMania?
Back at 4.
And secret match number 15 was a dark match where Coco Beware jobbed out the Brooklyn Brawler.
You usually do your Vince screams down the card shtick. Skipping that this time?
No, I've been hurt. Did you like the Star Wars intro with the flag going away from the screen? because I didn't. I fucking hated him.
You know, he had Slaughter on the left and Hogan on the right. And it looks fine on TV, but in reality, their faces are very close together. Mm. They're moving in for a smooch, you know?
Smooch.
Yeah.
Did you notice Sergeant Slaughter does a little growl when he turns towards the camera? He's like,
it's cool. God, no. Probably the least offensive version of the US national anthem I've ever heard. I have nothing bad to say about Willie Nelson.
And did you notice he was wearing like a toy wrestling belt?
That's awesome.
Actually, I didn't get the Willie Nelson. I didn't get Rockin' Robin last year either. My version was absolutely cut to shreds.
What length was your show?
Gonna punch me if I tell you.
Yeah.
2 hours, 32 minutes.
Ah! 58 minutes longer.
Wow.
By the way, just next time, perhaps me and Steve can watch the shorter version and you can watch the longer version.
Then perhaps me and you can edit the show. Hacksaw Jim Duggan came out to do commentary. Did you see him?
Yeah, like a homeless Uncle Sam.
I didn't get a look at him. What did he look like?
Homeless Uncle Sam.
To kick us off, first match of the night is the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty versus Bobby Heenan's Haku and the Barbarian.
Just prior to this, we had Sean Mooney backstage interviewing both of the Rockers. They spend about 2 minutes talking about how small they are and that size matters. That's about it. But just the two of them speak so quickly. It's like they're shitting themselves so much that they can only see the end line and they want to get there, you know?
Hold on, we still have a British Bulldog promo to come. give them a break.
A hawk. Yeah. Still won't ride me yet.
Did you notice that Marty says that they're tag team specialists, but Barbarian was in the tag team for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Haku has definitely held the tag title before, so the Rockers really have no special advantage over the other two lads.
No.
Speed. In fact, Haku...
Both the drug and the concept.
I would say Haku is the most experienced, and the gold that he used to have proves it.
Absolutely, 100% agree with that. He's also a non-kayfabe badass as well,
right? Is he?
Yeah, he's meant to be one of the real tough guys in wrestling history. Like,
he looks it as well.
Yeah.
There's some really cool Rockers tag team tandem manoeuvres. Like, there's a double nip-up.
The Rockers did a double spinning bump from a clothesline, Kishi bump.
Yeah. And then there was a double super kick, and that's all gold. There was actually a cool double splash as well. I really like that.
I thought Marty's selling in this match was rock bottom. I thought it was really bad to the degree that it affected the match. There was also a great spot by the heels where they did like a powerbomb heart attack type move onto the top rope. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was like a slingshot hangman.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Lovely. Yeah. Barbarian hit a really nice clothesline on Marty. It hit him right in his face, actually.
It was a good opener, but I was somewhat disappointed after their excellent Royal Rumble performance with the Orient Express. And I'd put that down to old man Pat and the Japanese Patriot being better workers than Haku Barbarian.
I don't know about Haku. I think he's a pretty good worker. I thought him and HBK had a pretty good opening. It was pretty quick.
Really enjoyed this match. As far as it goes with the Rockers yet again opening a pay-per-view. Really good start. Have you noticed, by the way, how little Shawn Michaels has changed his array of moves since the Rockers?
Yeah.
You know, he looks the same. He acts, and fair enough, I'm sure most wrestlers like that. But, you know, his when he tackles somebody to the ground and he does these little punches, I think they look fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Well, he did add the inverted atomic drop to the mix.
Thank God for that.
And that has made all the difference. What did you think of Duggan on commentary?
He was okay, but it's just once I saw what he looked like, it's just credibility is gone at this point when you look like that, you know? Very, very happy to see him go.
As far as all the commentators we had tonight, he was probably the weakest, but I still thought he was pretty damn good.
Yeah, so the Rockers win with HBK getting the cross body on Haku at 10:32. When he goes to the crowd, we get a sighting of Vladimir the Superfan.
Nice.
All right, so Bobby Heenan relieves Jim Duggan on commentary. Fantastic. Actually, I reckon I've got a lot cut out of my version, obviously, but I have some inserts instead, so if I go past something, just, you know, just bring it up and turn it.
Yeah, we always do, Jay, we always do.
Match night.
No.
So after the first match, we have Mean Gene interviewing tonight's celebrity people. Is it Phil Regis?
From Regis Philman.
He is the host of like a morning chat show thing. Supposedly he's a big wrestling fan. He's like loads of wrestlers on the show throughout the years.
Yeah, yeah. He says he can't get close to Earthquake, and Gene says,
"You're beautiful."
Thank you.
He was beautiful.
Regis.
Oh, sorry. You say that like it was obvious.
Who was the blonde chick?
Marla Maples.
Actually, I was watching this with my mom, and she recognised her straight
off. Fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
No way.
Marla Maples, a socialite, i.e. you're unemployed.
Oh, she's fucking...
Big Brother before there was Big Brother, you know.
Yeah, you're one with the video and the dog and the bogey eye.
The video and the dog?
No, like... Paris Hilton, one of those, socialite. Yeah, yeah.
Marla Maples, best known for being a celebrity damn homewrecker. She had an affair with married man Donald Trump, who's in the crowd, and married Trump for 6 years. And the public scandal was in 1991, so WWF are capitalising on her relative celebrity infamousness.
She's not even good looking.
Not that hot at all.
There's no meat on her, yeah. So she's just a plank. Surfboard. Yeah, Marla Maples says she'll be in the men's shower. And Trebek and Mean Gene do a who's on first? Ayatollah was on second. Terrible. Terrible.
But at least two of them are celebrities.
Yes, yes.
Match number two is the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich versus Dino Bravo. I guess it's this point where we will start the death toll with two.
Oh, fuck. How is Marty still alive is what I want to know.
Good point.
That's true.
Did you guys think that Dino Bravo looked quite, like, swollen?
Yeah, it looked like somebody had given him a box in the nose.
So this is the first of the many throwaway matches at WrestleMania, and that's quite sad for someone of the talent of Kerry Von Erich. Yeah, it's just a squash match. Tornado came to the ring, and he was trying to take off his jacket, and Dino Bravo clotheslined him out. I was like, that's great.
So fucking Bravo, this has to be his last pay-per-view. Come on, Jay.
He's wrestling for the next six pay-per-views in a row. No, this is Dino Bravo's last pay-per-view match. You're absolutely right.
In all fairness, he did have a good run.
No, he didn't.
No, I mean in longevity.
In getting fired.
I'm astonished he's still around at this point. He had his little weightlifting thing or was years
That's
ago.
Probably what kept him his job for all that time.
Yeah.
And with Earthquake as well, that was a good move for him.
Yeah, but Earthquake didn't need him.
Oh yeah, it was good for him.
Terrible for him.
So Tornado blows away Bravo with a discus punch at 3:11. I was saying this is Dino Bravo's last pay-per-view match, but he'll stick around until next year making up the numbers before he was murdered in February 93 due to his
snooker.
due to his black market shenanigans. Yeah, it was a Canadian mafia, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Terrible stuff. Very, very
Canadians
uncool.
Were too nice to have a mafia.
Yeah, yeah.
They're probably American and came over the border.
Yeah, probably. Interviews. Sean Mooney talking with the Warlord and Slick. Slick, I thought he sounded like a meth addict. He does say the word dog numerous times. I could make that out. And then Warlord ends this by saying that nobody will escape his Full Nelson.
So the Chris Masters Full Nelson gimmick before there was a Chris Masters.
Was he ever using this move beforehand? Like, was this ever...
No.
No? So this is a recent thing, yeah?
Very good, Steve. And very good, Steve. yep, the upcoming match is the Battle of the Roidy Magoos. They must have heard our Rumble review. Crazy. It's the Warlord versus Desperate Dan Davey Boy Smith.
Hello. You may think that the Queen of England would be predicting victory for the British Bulldog at WrestleMania. Not so. I am, in fact, predicting a stunning victory for the Warlord. After all, it was his hold, the Full Nelson, that was named after the great British Admiral, Lord Nelson.
A few weeks before WrestleMania, we saw video footage from the Queen of England, saying she's backing the Warlord against the British Bulldog. But in the GTV-style security camera footage, it was revealed that it was all a hoax perpetrated
by Bobby Heenan.
The next interview was the Bulldog interview.
And has he gotten any better since the Rumble?
Man, he's gotten worse. What's his dog's name? Churchill, well, is it?
No,
Yes, Davey Boy Smith, he's kicked that bitch Matilda to the curb. And he has his new canine companion, Winston. So either he's English or he loves Ghostbusters.
Bulldog says that he will break the full Nelson. It's quite pessimistic, really, isn't it? You know, the fact that he thinks he's going to actually be caught in the full Nelson.
He also finishes his promo with the cracking line saying, I can't do a Manchester accent, I'm going to try.
Ah, go on.
Go on, Steve, go on.
Hold on. No.
What did you say?
He says, there's no bull in this dog.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, do you want to give it a try?
There ain't no bull in this dog, lad.
Not bad, not bad.
Or is that more Yorkshire? Sorry, Leeds, yeah, which is in Yorkshire, yeah, yeah.
There's no bull in this dog. No, that's Scottish.
That's not bad, though. No, that's actually pretty good.
Mustard choppy!
Default.
Just don't ask me to do it in Australia. Disaster.
There is no bull in this British bulldog.
I'll be doggone!
So yeah, the build-up to this match was the Warlord had been offering the Master Lock Challenge on Primetime Wrestling, who can escape my finisher, the full Nelson. And when Bulldog came out and he was about to break it, he was attacked. So it's the full Nelson versus the Running Power Slam. Yeah, oh my god, holy shit, the size of these two lads. The match wasn't that long, but I couldn't get over their size. I was just mesmerised. How is
their backs, like, just absolutely monstrous, you know?
The Bulldog is definitely bigger than he was at the Rumble, but he is more disproportionate. Like, his lats are crazy huge. Like, he can't put his arms down now, but the Warlord is more proportionate.
Mm.
But as far as look goes, I think these two lads look a fucking million bucks.
Yeah, I can't deny that they're both not really awesome looking. Holy shit. Especially the Warlord.
The Warlord looks amazing. Oh, man.
Monsoon quips that you get the irresistible force and the immovable object that immediately moves.
You know what? I thought that the story for this match was ruined seconds into the match. Bulldog tries to knock Warlord off his feet. You know, the running off the ropes, hitting the shoulder blocks, and he does it. Where does this match go from here?
Yeah, so this is a surprisingly quick-paced match, despite the pure muscle mass of both men. Bulldog definitely sacrificing his back for muscle mass, but he has both muscle and speed mobility for a few years, but that'll come back to get him, like. Alright, so the finish of the match is where Bulldog breaks out of the full Nelson, eh? That's what a babyface does. Mm-hmm. Makes good on his promise. And he gets put in the full Nelson. Still pessimistic. And hits the running power slam. And they splat on the ground. It's like there's a little quake in the mat. And gets the clean 3 at 8:13.
I thought this was a fantastic match. Considering their size, both of them can work. It was fast, free-flowing, good pace all around. Some nice moves thrown in as well by both lads. But this is like kind of the Vince wet dream match. And normally it's going to be terrible. But really, really impressed with this. The crowd were fucking mental into it. Especially, obviously, Bulldog there. He's crazy over. Sure, he's only been back, what, 2 pay-per-views as a singles wrestler. Yeah, good job, lads. Good job. I wonder where Warlord goes from here, though, you know? That's the only thing.
Yeah, I gotta say, I thought this match was fucking awesome. So quick-paced, I had no idea that Warlord could work at a pace like this. Fantastic match. Both men looked great. Did you like the Arn Anderson selling by the Bulldog when the Warlord hit a sunset flip?
It wasn't. Come on now. Come on.
Obviously, it wasn't up to the fucking epicness of that, but...
Hello, Arn. Hello, Arn.
Maybe it was kind of more Caribbean, not quite Hawaiian. We go backstage where we've got the Nasty Boys and a suit change Jimmy Hart. They've got a title shot? What? Why?
Yeah, sure, this is SAG's first appearance on paper.
I was like, yeah, hot off the heels of not winning the Rumble.
Pays to be Hogan's best mate and be managed by Hogan's other mate. So the Nasties, they actually did win a tag team battle royal match. That's why they're the number one contenders. So the Nasty Boys just call the Hart Foundation
the Stink and Pink.
How do they get away with that?
Why? What's wrong with that?
The Pink and the Stink?
Alright, sorry. Like Jimmy Savile again.
Woo, the internet police are here. BBC all over the place.
I'll set up an interview with Martin Bashir. You're going down, Steve. Much like Jimmy Savile. And then there is an interview with the Hart Foundation where Sean Mooney contends that the Nasty Boys were blowing more than hot air. Yeah, you got an immediate title shot. I'm sure it was blowing Hogan.
Hey.
Brett says the Nasties are at the bottom of the barrel and will stay there. Yeah, cheers. Well done. Although it's an accurate description, he did nothing for the match. Just a bit of background on the Nasties. They wrestled their last few months in WCW without a contract, so Vince just snapped them up. And, yeah, this was the least of WCW's worries at the time, with your boy, Jim Hurd, and the returning Dusty Rhodes coming to sort things out.
Nice.
So the Nasty Boys were obviously in the right place at the right time, because Brett is now looks to be going to get a singles push. Obviously, the Hart Foundation have to drop the titles. You're not going to give them back to Demolition. You're not going to drop them to a face team. So why not the Nasty Boys?
Some serious foreshadowing going on here. Do you know something I don't? So this is the first pay-per-view title defense in 7 months for the Hart Foundation since they won it against Demolition at SummerSlam 1990. You might notice Jimmy Hart's awesome motorcycle helmet. Mm. Well, he had it for two reasons. One of them, motorcycles make you look hard and cool and tough. Nasty Boys, tough lads, you know. And also, yeah, it looks hilarious.
Yeah. I thought he looked awesome. I actually thought that his new helmet and jacket was the best thing about this match.
Cut to the crowd, there's this woman wearing massive pyramid earrings. And yeah, Macaulay Culkin. Oh, I'll get a bit of... Never mind. Michael Jackson's still okay.
Explosive start to the match. The crowd are mental, and I was kind of thinking, is this piped in as well at some point?
Definitely crowd sweetening on my version, the Coliseum home video version, because like the crowd go mental. I can't see any of you go mental. You know?
Yeah. I thought this was a pretty uneventful match. It was like there was not much wrestling. Sags will batter Brett, then he'll tag in Anvil, and he'll batter Sags, then he'll tag in Knobs, Anvil will batter him, then he'll batter someone, and it just kept going round and round and round until the faces hit the heart attack.
You know, fair enough, you're building up to the hot tag, but I just thought the build was way too long to get Neidhart in.
Watching the match, I thought Brett, in general, well, he was right to denigrate them earlier on tonight, because he was quite outclassing and dictating the pace of the match. Like, I thought the Hart Foundation, in general, battered the Nasty Boys.
Brett finally tags in Anvil to the most tepid reaction I've ever seen. The crowd didn't give a shite about this match, and neither did I, really.
The finish of the match is the Harts get the heart attack. They look to make a clinic of this match, but the ref, there's a bit of confusion in there, and Jimmy Hart gets his helmet off. Alright, and so we get a helmet shot, which Monsoon...
Oh, that's even worse!
Sags uses Jimmy Hart's helmet. Monsoon calls it a megaphone.
Does he?
He does, yeah.
Fucking idiot.
I've got, well, my helmet's a bit, looks a bit like
it frays outwards at the end.
Called us the spouter.
And the Nasty Boys with the shock upset win due to a helmet shot at 12:08.
When the Hart Foundation do the heart attack, so Brett is still in the ring and the ref starts berating him, telling him to get out of the ring, enabling the Nasty Boys to steal the win. But that never happens. All of a sudden, the referee takes exception to the two men of a tag team being in the ring while the pin is going on.
Yeah, Survivor Series, when the Ultimate Warrior is getting the final pin, he doesn't mind Hulk Hogan coming in and slapping the mat.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I thought this was like the heel version of Cena 2007 booking, where they get outclassed and battered the whole match, but they steal the win.
When you think about it, the booking was really, really poor, right? Because A, nobody knows these wrestlers, so they're not really over. B, B, they haven't really earned their title shot, and C, they're going to go on to face someone else. And
who is of much higher standing
yes.
than they are.
Well, it's exactly what happened with Hogan when he won his first WWF title, wasn't it? That Backlund was the champion, Sheik beat Backlund, and then the title was hot-shotted to Hogan.
I couldn't agree more. The way the Nasties were booked in this match, yeah, inept, cowardly heels, and they looked at literally defined transitional champions.
They're ugly.
Every comedy mid-card tag team gimmick. Yeah. Mid-card and the tag team, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's great to have that.
Yeah. So this is the last pay-per-view for the Hart Foundation, as Anvil would be released shortly after the pay-per-view, which might explain the way he's wrestling and the extremely cold, hot tag. However, it would not be the end for the Hart Foundation. More on that next time. So more accurately, it's the end of Brett and Anvil wrestling.
It's a shame. I thought they were a brilliant tag team over the past few years.
Yeah, yeah. Vince is fully confident in Brett's abilities as a singles wrestler. So, yeah, here we go.
I thought the match started off okay, got really shit. But it's great to see Brett now breaking out.
Cool. See this motorcycle helmet finish with Jimmy Hart's... There's no way to avoid this.
Go on, go.
Avoid Jimmy Hart's helmet shot.
I'll definitely put me down for the three. Definitely.
This is a finish TNA would reenact with Team 3D and the Nasty Boys at Against All Odds 2010.
Wow.
I love the way TNA have WWE's continuity in history.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
By the way, we've never really talked about Jim Neidhart's little pink beanie. just wanted to get that in there before he goes. He's the kind of guy I wouldn't slag about a little pink beanie.
No, absolutely not.
What if he put a propeller on top?
And then I'd slag him. I don't care how much of a beating I was going to get.
There was a video montage of the Snake Martel match.
This pay-per-view, if it does anything right, it does have an awful lot of promo packages.
Yeah, I was so happy to see it as well.
I was happy for you.
So we got Jake the Snake Roberts versus Rick Martel in a blindfold match. And this makes sense to have this match. You get to see in the video montage back in October, Rick Martel blinded Jake Roberts by accident on purpose when he was trying to smoke out.
Selling there was fantastic.
So Jake and the model signed their match for WrestleMania because Jake wanted the model to know what it's like to live in the dark. But you've one good eye.
Brilliant.
Not only that, wouldn't it have made more sense to have this match when Jake was actually blind in one eye instead of now he can see?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. The promo package showed, yeah, October, this happened in October. It's March.
Yeah.
They stopped for a couple of months. Yeah.
Surely the whole point of the booking is to bring Rick Martel on even playing ground with Jake Roberts. Like,
I won't begrudge him because WrestleMania is the time to do a blow-off match.
Okay. Yeah. Did you like Jake Roberts' get-up in the recap video? With the fucking snake boots, the skinny jeans, and the ski goggles, and the lovely Christmas Gansy. Amazing, with my scraggly homeless hair.
Yeah. We're in 1991, it's not 1972. Yeah.
Love it. Prior to this match, Roberts cut a fantastic promo. It was an amazing promo. Hopefully Jay splices it.
Then I shall do such.
The blind leading the blind. Even a fool knows that a man only has 5 senses. A snake, he has 6. We always do it better in the dark.
So this is the ill-fated blindfold match. You know, it's kind of gone down in history. And, come on.
I was really sad watching the Silver Vision version because they cut the Skeetly Beedly. I was so sad.
Before you get into it, we should probably explain what Skeetly Beedly. Skeetly Beedly. Explain what that means in the first
place. See, there's a hand movement that you can't see.
I'll just read it out what I have. There it is, right there, is the moment that Jake Roberts ruined the blindfold match for all of us.
And wrestling in general.
And
you have murdered kayfabe live on TV.
You have snooked kayfabe. It was just... Obviously, he just flat out wasn't thinking. Because if he had been thinking, he would never have decided to stick his face... Sorry, hand up his hood and go, boodly, boodly. And a little wave, like... It shattered the illusion, didn't it?
Yeah. So it's painfully obvious that the blindfold is see-through. It's just a mesh, so you can't see it. But not if you put your hand up to it. You get to see it. This is a theatrical performance, and it shatters any suspension of disbelief.
In all fairness, though, this is only the second worst blindfold match in history.
Wait, what's the other one?
James Storm, isn't it?
There were... yeah. There were three blindfold matches that I can remember in memory. One is the D'Lo Brown Triple H one. That was awesome.
Fantastic, yeah.
We have the TNA disaster piece with James Storm and Chris Harris, was it? Where they keep the blindfolds just do everything they're not supposed to do. They come loose, they fall off. Oh. Just put the whole match in, Jay, please. It's amazing. It's a tour de force.
This shit seems to only happen to TNA, like that kind of, you know, accumulation of botches, you know, on a grandstand. It's like, you know, you've got the X Division contract up on the clipboard and the contract falls down. So let's fight for the clipboard.
Oh my god.
See, I don't even know if you can hear in that hood. I know I couldn't breathe, but I don't know how good you can hear. I thought you said you had it on.
So much like D'Lo Brown and Triple H back in the Attitude Era, we get there's only one way to book a blindfold match, and that's the classic blindfold booking where there's a heel in the face and the face points somewhere. You know, he starts on the left hand side and the crowd cheer and boo whether he's hot and cold. This is like fantastic. If you wanted to involve the crowd in a match,
exactly pretty much what I have here. Watching it on TV is torture, really. But I can imagine being in the crowd would be so much
fun, wouldn't it?
It would be one of the most fun matches to watch live, because you're just constantly getting involved in the match.
I'd imagine for most fans, this is the first time they'd ever seen anything like. Imagine like in '91, you're going, "This is crazy," you know. I thought that Rick Martel sold being like nervous and timid, walking around, grabbing the ropes, and I thought he was brilliant.
He'd just lash out and kick wildly and that kind of stuff.
A lot of it was pretty campy from Martel, but it was actually quite amusing.
Yeah, some fantastic, complete. This really is Punch and Judy stuff. It's great, though. Rick Martel, there's a great spot where he telegraphs a back body drop and he just goes, "Huh!" And, you know, it was the first time in history that someone was thrown to the ropes and didn't run back.
And ran sideways. Jake was near the turnbuckle and Martel was quite near him, but they didn't know where they were. And then Roberts just all of a sudden claps. And then Rick obviously hears it and then runs. But by the time he's run to where the sound came from, Roberts had already moved to the side. Genius.
Well, you know, if I was Martel, I would have thought, why is he clapping? Is this a trick of some kind? Who claps in a wrestling match?
He's a heel, he's a kaha! I knew it. You were going to clap sooner or later. Yeah, so this gimmick is milked for all it's worth. And yes, I honestly thought it was fantastic. I never want to see it again. Because you've done everything and there's nothing new you can do, but for a one-time gig, yeah, fantastic. There was also a great bit where they're both on the ground kind of searching around and Rick Martel goes to the corner and finds Damien and takes a massive, like a scaredy cat bump. It's like an imaginary, The Rock takes a stunner. It's that kind of,
it was fantastic. Other than the opening 15 seconds where the match is ruined, it was a great match. I had fun watching this match.
I think Jay's hit the nail on the head. Yeah, watch it once just to see it, but no more, thanks.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a real blindfold match.
I wouldn't.
Just to see it. Just to see it.
It would probably turn into a kind of MMA brawl where they try to grab each other and take each other down.
Yeah.
Then everyone starts booing.
Yeah.
Because MMA and wrestling.
Yeah.
So in the end, Jake finds Martel and gives him a DDT, and kablammo, he is out for the count. This is an exemplary sell job. And we get the clean finish, the 1-2-3 after the DDT at 8:33, and the blow off to a 6-month feud. It was perfect. After the match, Jake busts Martel's atomizer.
Jake then should have gotten Damien, which he was attempting to do, and strangled Martel. But Martel gets away, so he doesn't really get his revenge. After Martel blinds the poor guy for months, all he ends up doing is giving him a DDT.
Yeah.
You know? I assume it's a blow-off, but I don't think Jake got his revenge.
We got a measure of revenge. Hmm. And, bigger and better things await Jake in the future for the rest of 91. So huzzah. Excellent. This is the first time we've had some positive to say about Jake in God knows how long.
Yeah, I was happy with this. Even and with the Fibbly Bubbly.
Marla Maples with Jimmy Hart's clan celebrate with the Nasty Boys, who have the new gold tag team title belts. Previously, they were mostly gold, but the middle of it was kind of silver.
That's true, yeah.
And now it's like just completely, bam, saturated gold.
And so these are the belts that they had up until, 2002 or something, is it?
They split them, yeah. With the bum SmackDown belt.
Yeah.
Or did you guys get a special Coliseum report?
Nope.
Well, Alfred Hayes brings us to, it's the basically access from the pay-per-view, but look really shit this time around. So we get dinner, autographs, and Jake with his daughter, and he's cajoling her to say something to the camera, and she's having none of it. So he's like, all right, just give us a kiss. And she goes in for a kiss, and he kisses her on the lips, and he's like, ha-ha, gotcha.
Savile the shit out of you.
And then some people pose for photos. It looks shite. It looked much better last year.
Should I just get the siren going? Murder, death, kill.
It's the Dead Man versus The Undertaker. It's The Undertaker with Paul Bearer versus Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Now, this is the pay-per-view debut of Percy Pringle, i.e. Paul Bearer, most known beforehand in World Class Championship Wrestling, who was previously an actual mortician. And look at him with his gimmick with the white face, the shrill voice, and the urn. Get in.
Yeah, this is awesome.
When I was watching the pay-per-view, I heard Superfly's theme, and I was like, oh, fuck off. And then I heard Taker's theme, I was like, yes! I know the
rest. I know who's winning this, yeah. We did a terrible dubbed, stupid version for Snuka's song, because normally they just pay for his normal song. Yeah, I was really pissed off, and he was absolutely ripped in this match.
I was actually listening to an interview with Jim Hurd, and one of the co-hosts there was like, why couldn't you do anything with The Undertaker? And he was like, well, Mark Holloway, he just didn't really smile that much, so I thought he'd be terrible, you know?
Did you ever think of like making him a heel?
He sounds like a nice guy. Like, he's fine with that he was terrible in his job, and freely admits, like, Vince is much smarter than I am, so, you know, it's nice of him, but he doesn't smile enough. Unmarketable. Phenomenal, dominant booking. No selling by the Taker. He can't feel pain. He's the unstoppable monster. It's just completely different. It's like in its own world. It's like special booking for this guy.
It's like even his entrance is great. It's like just children all over the arena are clearly terrified and they're like holding on to their parents and shit. Just
that's complete crap.
It's odd. Did you not see the kids?
I pooed my pants. So Snuka headbutts Taker. Monsoon calls him a phenom.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
This is a squash match. This actually reminds me of Earthquake, maybe last year, prior to Mania. He was like, oh shit, you know, here's the new monster heel on the block.
Snuka is knocked to the outside and then pops up onto the top rope and attempts to do like a springboard splash. And Taker catches him and is meant to lift him right into the tombstone, but obviously can't do it. And then you see him say something to Snuka, who then falls back onto the ground and jumps right back up.
So The Undertaker gets up Snuka. Yeah, this is before people learned how to take tombstones correctly, because he just, you know, splits his legs, gives Taker a big nose full of bush. And the Undertaker hits a tombstone, and 1, 2, 3. Yes, Taker 1-0 with the tombstone at 4 minutes 19. And this is the final singles pay-per-view match for Jimmy Murderer Snuka, but would sporadically make up the numbers on pay-per-views down the road. And this also makes me happy. Pay-per-view wise, he's got the anti-streak, and he's 0-8 on pay-per-view.
You were joking.
That's awesome, I didn't know that.
0-8. That's a fucking terrible record.
Even the Rooster has a win on pay-per-view.
Yeah, he beat Heenan.
Heenan, of course. Yeah. That's what you get for killing a girl.
Yeah. Karma, bitches. What do we got next, Alex?
Another promo package for Savage and Warrior.
Yeah, voiceless this time. Weird. Amazing in this promo package. Macho Man's dressed like Tony the Tiger. Blistering yellow, like, tiger print.
Nice. Is he great?
He is.
The only problem with the promo package is that they don't explain why it's career versus career. Why do they have this stipulation?
Okay, well, let's gather around and I shall tell you a tale. So it's the Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Savage. Awesome. In a retirement match. Oh, God. Because I didn't want to lose either of these guys. Prior to the pay-per-view, the Warrior finally snapped and battered Brother Love and battered him all the way to the ring. A press landed him, splashed him, and then destroyed the Brother Love set. That is the end of the Brother Love show.
Hey.
Savage, after not getting his title match from Sergeant Slaughter, it's just Savage and Warrior going at each other, going tete-a-tete, and saying that the Warrior wanted the match with Savage more than he wanted a rematch with Sergeant Slaughter, because this match, this heated blood feud, this now retirement match, is worth more to him than the title.
Okay.
Not much of them.
Yeah. And why career versus career?
They just both hated each other's guts, and each one wanted the other one out of the Federation forever.
That's good enough for me.
I get an impression that there's a bit of reality behind that.
There
as well.
Is. Well, yeah. We'll go through it after the match.
Awesome.
But yes, reality dictated the retirement match.
There can only be one number two.
So it's the Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Macho Man Savage. So the camera pans around to the crowd and we get a shot of Liz. Miss Elizabeth is in the arena.
Is in, as Monsoon would call them, the poor seats.
Crazy, I couldn't believe that. I wonder if that'll play into the match at all.
It's just coincidence. She looks just like a regular member of the audience that paid for a ticket. Just, we'll get to that later on.
So the last time Liz was on camera was at WrestleMania 6 1 year ago, where she was involved in the Sherry and Savage versus Dusty and Sapphire mixed tag match. You know, she helped them get a schoolgirl and get the win, and then she did her white girl dance, you know, her Elaine Seinfeld dance in the ring. And Macho and Sherry come out on a double throne.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah. And when they pass by the camera pans directly to Liz, just looking. I thought that was fantastic camera work.
It was really, really good. You know exactly what's going on, you know? It's booking perfection. Like,
what was Warrior dressed in?
Warrior was dressed in many tassels and many strings.
I thought he looked like a hobo from the future. Like, just decked out in shredded post-it notes. Yeah, and on his knee pads, you can see that he has Macho's face and Warrior's face. And on his arse, he's got a picture of the WWF Championship. And it says, means much more than this.
Yeah. Hold on, what?
This match means much more than this. Title belt.
Okay, I thought it was like,
this is a blood feud.
The belt means more than his arse.
Uncharacteristically, for the first time ever in the Fed, the Warrior walks to the ring. It's weird.
Yeah, it's good.
Heenan notes this, and yeah, thanks. Cheers.
Did you notice that the fans immediately started to chant Hogan?
No.
It really bugged me, as both guys were taking their gear off and getting ready to a big Hogan chant. Booming, like.
Well, because they edited that out of my version, because it was like, Warrior, Warrior.
Oh, God. It's a fucking SmackDown, is it?
Oh, my God. Just one more. Sherry, what is she wearing? She's in some kind of cabaret-type chandelier.
Chandelier, yeah. Nice arse, though.
Oh, jeez. We got a lot of that in this match. Just the cameraman, he knew what's up.
So this match kicks off with stalling. Posing and stalling and many minutes of work in the crowd, but it was all great because the crowd are really up for it, you know?
So yeah. This is quite the classic heel versus babyface booking, where the face is the massive one who has the advantage, who's stronger. So the heel has to do dastardly things and cheat.
Yes.
So yeah. He's the more nimble guy. So they go back to it. It's a very simple storyline, but incredibly effective.
Brian Alvarez always makes a point to go out of his way and point out when wrestlers involved in a blood feud start a match with a lockup. It doesn't really bother me. Macho Man would never win a brawl with Warrior. So in kayfabe, he'd never want to go right in for a brawl. He'd want to outwork him, out-wrestle him, out-tire him. I just think painting all feuds with the same brush is a bit wrong. I thought this made sense for Macho Man's gimmick. Like.
Absolutely right. This made perfect sense because Macho would run out of the ring and, you know, Warrior would follow him. So he'd come back into the ring and start WCW kicking him when he comes back in. He'd use Sherry to his advantage, getting Sherry to get the Warrior's attention so he can Pearl Harbor him. And he'd even go out to the outside and get a chair, throw it into the ring so the ref has to usher the get the chair and get it out of the ring and he can Pearl Harbor Ultimate Warrior again. So yeah, it's really effective and it's just really smart booking as well. Mm. Well done, Macho Man.
I put all this to Macho because I reckon he planned this match move for move, took Warrior through it. They probably practiced it fucking loads of times as well. Like,
there was one of the spots where Savage was coming off the top rope and Warrior catches him like a splash, but then lets down Macho Man and then slaps him in the face.
Yes, I hadn't written all that down, so I don't.
That was the crazy, I'm the face, you can't topple me.
And it's at that point that we get shot numero uno of Sherry's arse as she bends down to pick up the Ultimate Warrior. After Sherry's arse, Macho Man gets his heat back because Sherry keeps on interfering. But of course, Warrior keeps overpowering him and getting the heat back. Sherry, our shot number two. Sherry decides to climb up on the ring apron right beside the cameraman and get her hole right in camera shot. It was great. Good girl. She then distracts the referee from counting Warrior's roll-up. We have a ref bump. Then Sherry hits Macho Man with the shoe from the top rope by accident. Warrior chases her around the ring. And then Macho Man eventually uses this distraction to roll a Warrior for a two count.
Steve, have you got the one man crisscross in there?
No!
There is a one man crisscross. And the Warrior builds up a big head of steam. And Savage moves out of the way and kind of face plants Warrior. Then transitions straight into Sherry's arse.
Is this Sherry arse shot number three? Macho Man hits five elbow drops in a row.
Five elbow drops.
Five elbow drops
five
in a row.
Five super kicks, five pedigrees. Well, you only need one.
This is five of your super move. Yeah. Five of the move that you used to win the world title.
And
he kicks out!
Not only does he kick out, but you can see him moving his arms up at one to prepare for the kick out.
So it was obvious, you know, when a wrestler is getting pinned and he decides to look at the referee counting. Do you not have an internal metronome going? Because, like, you only need two clicks. It's just kick out. It's not like this is, you know, like you'd need to bring a fucking abacus to the ring. This is easy stuff. Kick out before the third click in your head, you know. But no.
One,
two, three.
Ah, oh, fuck. I thought this was worse than anything Hogan has done, guys.
Macho probably put this match together, right? Or did put this match together.
He did, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's no... If Warrior suggested I want five elbow drops and going to kick out, Macho would have said fuck off.
Maybe,
so you would assume that Macho suggested it. I think it would have been just as tense or suspenseful, should I say, if there was one elbow drop, maybe two.
And go up and pose and and then Warrior rolls away and misses. I'd have been absolutely fine with that. Mm. But the kick out after five,
shame.
There's so nothing really you can say to make it good, you know?
I have five elbow drops. Do not kick out, you fuck. Large capital letters.
A couple of fans actually booed as well when he kicked out. So there was a couple of smart fans there in 91. So, of course, after kicking out, Warrior makes his comeback, hits a few clotheslines, hits the press slam, hits the big splash from the canvas for a two.
And then he starts looking up to the gods and looking at his hands and asking why he can't finish off the Macho Man. And I just love, he's just about to walk out of the ring. And I was like, kind of, oh, fuck, where's he going? Where's he going? And then finally the gods speak to him and he comes back in the ring. I think it's fucking wonderful. Clearly hamming it up, and it's quite camp, but you can actually buy into it.
I loved it as well. The only part I didn't like is by the end, Monsoon was saying, oh, he's talking to his hands.
Yeah.
I was thinking, thank God Vince McMahon didn't have more of a hand in this match, because he would be like, if the Warrior was looking up to the heavens, like, Vince would get on the PA system.
Warrior! It's God!
Sherry helps Macho get Warrior's neck over the railing. DQ, no?
No, it's outside the ring. It's generally...
it's a Shavante, like.
Don't referees let it go when it's pretty, when it's outside the ring? It's
in a main event, they generally let it go, yeah.
Inside the ring is a different story.
Yeah, so Warrior gets a shoulder tackle on Macho, and Monsoon quips, nice spear job.
Warrior hits three shoulder tackles. Monsoon calls it a spear three times.
Macho Man is down. We get the absolutely clean-cut three count where Warrior goes over in an amazing match, which really should have main-evented.
For as good a match as this was, I absolutely despised the finish. It came out of nowhere. There's no heat to it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. It ruined it completely. And again, Macho putting this together, burying himself.
Maybe he knew what was coming after the match, and that no one's going to remember that Warrior won. Okay. So here you go.
Yep.
Here's the booking. Just look at the booking in this match.
He fucking Hogan'd it at the end. You're absolutely right.
Warrior was only a prop in the story of this match, because as soon as it's over, get the fuck out
get
of here.
Get out. Like, yeah.
And rightly so, to be honest. I don't want to see him going, oh! Actually, I would. That would be great to see Warrior cry at the end. Something really weird happens where Warrior re-jackets himself and then poses.
Maybe he just spent like about $4,000 getting the jacket made and he's like, God damn, I'm gonna fucking show this jacket off.
That's right, actually. He just really loved the jacket.
God damn, we know wrestlers.
Now he's sweating. He puts on the jacket. Now he's gonna have to get the fucking thing dry cleaned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then things come full circle where Sherry watches on in disbelief and goes into the ring and doesn't help Macho and ends up turning on him and beating him up. Oh my God. And I was like, as soon as this happened, my ma's like, I know what's happening here. She telegraphed it a couple of minutes ahead of time. Sherry continues to beat down, and sharp enough, Liz comes to his aid. She jumps over the barricade and runs to the ring.
Yeah, so a fan has jumped the barricade. Where's the security?
Tackler and start battering.
If I jumped the fucking guardrail, I'd be fucked out.
Yeah, so Macho Man, when he was getting beaten down by Sherry, he didn't see his assailant. But when he gets to his feet, he sees Miss Elizabeth. And so there's a bit of confusion at the moment. Of, oh, did you attack me? Actually, no, she's still healing out of me. Never mind. And Earl Hebner's like, ah, shoo, shoo. Oh, a really wonderful moment. We see Macho Man and Liz finally embrace, a face turn for Randy Savage. A bittersweet moment for finally turning face, getting back with Miss Elizabeth after 2 years away. But he's also leaving the WWF, so it's very sad, a very emotional moment for the crowd. And on the video, they pan to the camera where a couple of fans are crying.
There's a lot of teary-eyed women in the crowd.
It was one of the very few, if only, actually genuinely touching moments in wrestling history.
Yeah.
Because it's powerful, this scene. Yeah.
This is storytelling in wrestling at its very best.
There was no build-up to this, Liz returning and reuniting a Macho Man. But in the, whatever it was, 5 minutes, it did all it had to do in 5 minutes. It didn't need a big build. It was done so well.
Bobby Heenan was awesome as well. He was just going mentally. He called it sickening.
So, yeah, excellent storyline drama and an excellent match as well. Perfectly laid out. Got the absolute most you could out of the Warrior. This was...
Like, is this the best in his career?
Yes. This is a Hall of Fame worthy performance by Randy Savage.
Yeah.
If you can do this with the Warrior.
Very, very pleased.
Yes, a wonderful WrestleMania Christmas love story ending. There's a wonderful touch where Savage holds the rope open for Liz, as she would usually do that prior to them breaking up. Randy Savage steals the spotlight and the show halfway through the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
How about that? Probably is the most emotional moment in wrestling. I can't think of anything that trumps it.
Or SmackDown 9/11.
Oh, God. Yeah, so Randy Savage, yeah, he was actually considering retirement at this point, and, well, the WWF wasn't. Post-WrestleMania, Randy went to the SWS in Japan, and he wrestled under Mr. Madness. He left wrestling because himself and Liz wanted to try for a child, and he also wanted to get off the steroids to increase his chances of conception. Liz's chances of conception. Randy Savage is very image conscious. He didn't want to start shrinking in front of the fans as well on camera. So he thought, just get off TV for a bit. Yeah, so obviously these crying fans were plants in the crowd. But people in the arena say there was a load of people crying at it anyway. So just to make sure. But yeah, good stuff. Just before we finish the match, Monsoon drops the bomb on us, confirming that he is full of shit.
Welcome to WrestleMania 7. And the largest pay-per-view audience in pay-per-view history. Obviously, that's full of shite.
Is it, though?
It's the largest potential pay-per-view market.
So what he said is, there's never been more technology in the world, is what he said.
That's exactly what he means. This is like when fucking TNA go, Bound for Glory! Millions of people watching. Millions of potential watchers.
Or millions of people watching television.
Millions of streamers.
Hundreds of streamers. Lots of people watching television. Biggest pay-per-view audience.
In pay-per-view
This
history.
Is worse than the 93,000. This is like an hour into the show and you're telling me the buy rate? Get out.
Hello, I'm Nerby, and I'm Chubb, and we've taken over the OSW Review podcast, and if you want to get it back, Nerby's going to explain how you can get it back while I sing the NWO music. That's right, Chubb. If you want your precious OSW Review podcast back, then you will go to Nerby Radio, available on iTunes and at nerby.podbean.com, and you'll listen for the many ways to get your precious, precious OSWReview.com podcast back. That's right. And if you don't listen, then you should still listen to Nerby Radio anyway, because we're giving away millions of dollars every day. That's right, Chubb. So listen to Nerby Radio on iTunes and at nerby.podbean.com for your chance to be a millionaire and to, like, free the OSW Review guys from, like, their hostage situation. Yeah, because we're hostage people.
So immediate post-match promo with Macho Man and Liz. He just sounds concussed, to be honest. He says he's confused the Kingdom of the Madness is cracked in half. But what he said Liz did was wild, different, and awesome. I thought this was a bad idea. It's just you can do it some other time. It's just we can leave it for next time.
Yes,
we can get an update.
It's not going to get
it's
any
enough.
Better.
Yeah.
We can get a WWF report on it.
Brain and Monsoon just discuss the match afterwards.
Yeah.
I thought Brain was wonderful.
I have the exact same thing.
He says he'd rather have money than a skirt, because then you can have both.
We have Regis interviewing The Undertaker and Paul Bearer. He's asking questions and they are ignoring him and they are measuring him, which I thought was cool. I thought Regis was terrible, you know, because he's trying to turn it into jokes. This is meant to be a serious segment. He's like, he's measuring you for your coffin, like.
And then he starts whispering to Paul Bearer, oh, that's about 40, and that's very campy and not necessary.
Yeah, Paul Bearer should be doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
If they'd have flipped it around, it would be much better.
But
so
the next one is it...
it's your boy.
Maybe I'll just play the promo.
But I'm not going to have that problem because I'm here now with one of the greatest tag team combinations in World Wrestling Federation history. This is Smash and Crush Demolition, along with their great manager, Mr. Fuji.
Hey, that's Master Fuji. Get it right.
Sorry. No harm intended there. Domarigato to you fellows. Master Fuji.
Very good.
All right, listen, fellas. On one of the shows I host, Jeopardy, I have all of the answers, and our contestants have to come up with the right questions. Now, to do that, they've got to draw upon their great knowledge that they've acquired over the years. They've got to be cool under pressure, and they have to have good reflexes, cat-like reflexes almost, in order to be the first one to signal in. Now, it occurs to me that maybe those same qualities would really work for you guys here in the World Wrestling Federation. What do you think?
So you think you got all the answers, huh? Well, you always think you got all the answers. There's only one person around here that's got all the answers, and that's Master Fuji.
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
And Master Fuji knows all about pain, torture, and suffering.
And soon I'll jump up one and we'll know all about pain and torture and suffering.
The Jap opponent will know all about it. Thank you, gentlemen. I'll tell you, you guys have taken this conversation into an area that I had not anticipated, so if you'll forgive me, to tell the truth, I don't have anything else to say. So let's go back to Regis.
Fantastic.
That's it, the Jeopardy dude was talking to him.
And then it goes back to
Regis. Regis interviews some Japs, Tenru and Kitao.
Yeah, so Regis, obviously they're foreign, they don't speak English.
Yeah.
No? So he starts saying Japanese words that he does know.
Toyota!
Ah, good. Well, do you hear this? I'm on a roll now. Isuzu.
Oh,
yeah. There's language barrier, so he just starts to name Japanese car makes, and they nod and make Japanese sounds.
Pa, Nintendo.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, skull gone bomb.
Thankfully, we only have one more of these. Alex Trebek interviews Jake Roberts. He says nothing. It's one of his worst promos ever.
Alex Trebek, he is from...
Jeopardy.
Ha! And he...
What is Jeopardy? The show Alex Trebek hosts.
How am I going to edit that joke?
Backwards!
Cut to the Japanese killer bees!
Nice!
Killer bees!
Oh, demolition!
Post the real main event being done, Macho and Warrior. You know what my mom said? Oh, there's more.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Because that's the end. You've gone home happy.
It's
you've got what you're paying
happy
for.
Happy ending, yeah. Good. Another trade of the...
first thing I noticed, there's so many empty seats on the hard camera now.
The absolute death spot.
It reminds me a bit of WrestleMania 25, where Taker and HBK went on halfway through the pay-per-view. Triple H Orton afterwards, and it's like, who cares?
I was so happy that the main event bombed, because Triple H took it from Taker and Shawn.
Mm-hmm. Not for the first time as well. It's like he went after Rock and Hogan at WrestleMania X8.
Yeah.
Died to death with Chris Jericho. Doesn't learn.
No.
So, we got Genichiro, Tenryu, and Koji Kitao versus Demolition 2.0 Smash and Crush. Now, these lovely lads, they're both former sumo wrestlers that have transitioned into Western wrestling. Tenryu here is an All Japan veteran and a 3-time Triple Crown winner and a 1-time IWGP heavyweight champion in New Japan.
Mm-hmm. I'd actually heard of him. The other dude, never heard of.
Yeah, he's the only Yokozuna in sumo history to not win a top division tournament championship.
I thought you became a Yokozuna by winning a tournament.
He was in like the top, maybe won the playoffs. Like he was in the top four, spotting Champions League next year.
Did Demolition on your version have their actual song or the really shitty cover like we had?
We actually joined in progress, so you'll have to tell me.
Just a really bad cover of their awesome song.
They've actually lost the Demolition song, and this is their new song. This is befitting of Demolition 2.0.
Are you serious?
The fucking state of them, the state of your team, the state
it
of the
It was like, you know, bit, 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 bit. No, that's the fucking Beethoven. And the Japanese lads had, as I put it, a Rocky/Eugene cover song.
Yeah, 1 year ago, Demolition, the real Demolition, beat the Colossal Connection for the third title reign and were like the big wigs at the time, and look at them now. Did you get this? It was like a hilarious exchange about Kitao's first name.
No.
And so Heenan was like, oh, it's, what's his name again? It's like, oh, it's Koji. And I was like, what? Koji Kitao. I said, no one will remember that. He should be called Fred. Fred Kitao.
So you need to have 14 matches at WrestleMania for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Instead of getting rid of the deadweight, like Dino Bravo we've seen so far, you cannot debut wrestlers on a fucking WrestleMania.
On a Mania.
Come on.
With no build, with no storyline, with having never seen them before, that's not good enough, yeah.
Hilariously enough, Monsoon, he only knows the name of Tenryu. He doesn't know Kitao. He's very much like the Jumping Bomb Angels. So he just refers to him as him and Tenryu.
I'd just like to read my notes verbatim on this match. Absolute silence from fans. Place looks empty. Lots of punches so far. Power bomb. Who cares?
So the finish of the match is crazy. Tenryu defeats Smash with a powerbomb into a pinning combination. 1, 2, 3. So yeah, the miscellaneous foreigners win 4-4-1. And then as soon as Fink says, "Oh yeah, Tenryu and Kitao win," Monsoon is like, "Oh great, Kitao there! Oh, he's doing really well there, Kitao. Kitao's the man."
Brilliant. This is WrestleMania. There's only one tag match that's WrestleMania tag match. And that's Legion of Doom again. So were they building up to that match?
Yeah, we've been waiting since last summer for LOD versus Demolition.
Mm.
And we've lost Smash, gained Mullet, and what's this?
Why hasn't it happened?
Hogan's mates. It's because the Nasty Boys happened.
That's it?
Yeah. Fuji's back with LOD for no reason. Then they have a shitty match on Primetime Wrestling and it ends in a DQ. Great. Feud over.
Fuck me, man.
There's even more fire for why it should have been Demolition versus the Road Warriors, because it's the last pay-per-view of Demolition. They're done. And a squeaking fart of the finish of their career.
On the plus side, we do get Conor Crush. I love Conor Crush. Just going to say it right now.
Orange Crush. I can't wait for his, like, "Oh, dying, brah! You're making kids cry, brah!" Business. Next up, we got Mean Gene interviewing the Big Boss Man.
He spouts loads of cop lingo, so, you know, you're going to do some hard time and you're going to have no more appeals and not
you're
going
to get raped.
Yes.
He says that his mother's feelings are hurt and that's the worst of all. It's another feud that's kind of been cobbled together since summer of last year. Boss Man's working his way through the entire Heenan family as he has done Survivor Series, and then you saw with Barbarian the Rumble. And now he's on to the crown jewel, Mr. Perfect.
And then we get an interview with Pubic Head.
He does more of a noodle head.
I believe that he does not say the word perfect. I was marking out terrible promos.
Even Mr. Perfect is sick of saying the word perfect. Yeah. So in its place he says, right. So this is the right night and I'm the right person. Curiously enough, he says he won't be on his back and he won't give Bossman 56 softer swipes at him.
56 what?
56 softer swipes at him.
I don't get it.
I don't know. I'm sure it's some kind of prison movie reference or TV.
Yeah.
21 Jump Street? Was that a thing?
21 Jump Street. I'll give you 21 free jumps.
It's a hopscotch. It's the Big Boss Man versus Mr. Right for the Intercontinental Championship. Bobby Heenan, obviously enough, since he's with Mr. Perfect, he leaves the announce table and we're getting Lord Alfred Hayes.
And what a result.
Good or bad?
Really good.
Yeah?
I have my thumbs down.
This made this match sound like it was on Wrestling Challenge.
Ah, lads. I have, you know what? ? Alfred Hayes is a breath of fresh air on commentary. Why not used more?
And when I'm with the girlfriend, sometimes I doth venture south. And when I do, must say, a breath of fresh air. Yeah, at the start of the match, Boss Man wipes his arse with Perfect's towel. And Perfect, you can see his mouth. He says, "Fuck you, Boss Man."
Serves him right. He threw the fucking thing up, Boss
That's
Man.
A manky fucker I have written down here. That is disgusting.
Like his arse with it.
Yeah. I know he hasn't started wrestling yet, but I'd imagine it still
smells of arse.
Yeah. Big bang a hole of that.
Well, how do you feel about Boss Man's weight?
I think he's plateaued a bit. I don't think he's gotten bigger. He definitely hasn't lost weight since the Rumble anyway.
Heenan puts the boots to Boss Man when he's outside, and the first one is too light as Boss Man forgets to sell it. But it's alright, Heenan goes back and kicks him some more, so we're alright. You know?
First of all, I just talk about Perfect and his bumping. He was amazing at it. He's bumping like a boss out there, Steve.
It's silly. You cannot suspend your disbelief. Bossman gives him a slap and he does the big Kishi bump.
That's probably a bit silly. But his flare over the turnbuckle, that's probably the best I've ever seen it done. Like, it was incredible. So fast. Very, very fast bout. Loads of back and forward action. And I have to say, fair play to the big boss man, because I never thought he'd be able to keep up pace with Perfect. So after the last match where we have just absolute crowd apathy and death, I thought that they really perked up about 2 or 3 minutes into this match. A really big pop for the ball shot on to the post.
It just struck me what an amazing roster was around still in 91. Also quite liked Bossman takes off his belt and he's using it to beat Perfect, which should have been an automatic disqualification.
Yes.
And then the referee saying no, and he just takes the belt and places it neatly in the corner. Perfect picks it up, then wraps it around and decks Bossman. No disqualification. Again, no. What a nice referee.
Yes, and so out of nowhere, Andre comes down to the ring to get Heenan. Wow, jeez, I had no idea about this. Crazy to see Andre the Giant.
Yeah, very glad you didn't say that he walked down to the ring, because he really didn't.
No, he hobbled.
Hobbled and leaned and...
He leaned down to the ring. To be fair, he looked better than I expected him to look.
This is him having not wrestled for many months, and yeah, still noticeably worse than the last time.
We hadn't seen him since he leaned at wrestling.
So when you're not strong.
So Andre the Giant here makes his way to the timekeeper's area. Mostly his dick.
And fumbly's his bumbly.
And he takes the Intercontinental belt for some reason. How about that? Mr. Perfect sticks half of his body out through the rope so Andre doesn't even have to turn. He just swings on his right-hand side. But Perfect's put out his whole entire body to make sure he connects
spins
him.
Around the entire air in a bum play.
And he's knocked out. And both Mr. Perfect and the big boss man are out for the count. Boss man eventually turns over and puts a hand on him, and we get 1-2, and Perfect kicks out. But then it was really weird, because Heenan's jobbers come out, and they start beating up the boss man for the DQ. And it's like, did you just miss your cue? Were you supposed to break up that fall? So I was going to say Andre cleans house with all the heel jobbers, but no, like... He stands there and the house cleans around him.
I don't know what the purpose of him coming out anyway was, because...
No, a payday.
That's all no, in kayfabe terms. He looked like he was coming out to chase Heenan and, I don't know, grab him, beat him up. But he's never going to catch up to him. So just stand at the fucking entranceway.
Stand up a flight of stairs.
Okay, I'll get the lift.
Go down 3 steps. Yeah, so this is just for a bit of star power at WrestleMania. Put Andre the Giant on the marquee, you know?
And did they?
Yeah, because they're hurting for a squirting for the Pirates. Mr. Perfect retains his Intercontinental title belt.
Via bullshit!
Via Duggan, DQ at 10:26. And a big question mark is put on the main event.
Many question marks.
Is this what Slaughter is going to do and retain his belt, the dastardly heel?
None of my question marks were that question. They were all about this finish.
When's it going to end was probably the main question.
Yeah, so Big Boss Boob and Andre the Giant celebrate, you know, in a nothing match.
Well, you know.
I actually thought the match was pretty good. I thought the finish just stank it out.
No thought was put into it. It's just meh.
I thought the match was shit. I disliked the fact that Andre took the focus off Bossman, who's in the middle of this big push, going for the IC title, and then everyone's just like, what's Andre doing?
Leading. We get an exclusive Big Boss Man post-match interview. And, yeah, he's just talking, saying nonsense, and then it just pans out, and, oh, there's Andre. Hey, how about that? Yeah, so obviously he cuts an indiscernible French promo.
I was in ringside for sure, and I've got enough.
We are on to match number 10, the Earthquake with Jimmy Hart versus Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Now, this is one of my matches where it's joined in progress, and I was like, yeah, nice. Sticking it to you guys.
But you did miss some interviews. Did you miss the interviews in the crowd?
Aww.
Trump. Chuck Norris, Henry Winkler, and Lou Ferrigno. They just said, you know, brought the kids and it's great to be here and all. Other than Trump, those three lads seem like bloody nice blokes, actually, you have
yeah,
to say.
Yeah. Greg Valentine, an ex-Jimmy Hart member, versus an ex-member of...
He's his helmet.
Current and past Jimmy Hart managed wrestlers. No one's asking, but I'm going to tell you, he did turn face because himself and Jimmy Hart had a miscommunication on the house show. And so they parted ways. Monsoon mentioned it again. It takes him up to 15 minutes to get warmed up. And Monsoon's always slagging Valentine about his gas tank.
Story of this match. Only a few months ago, Earthquake was squashing everyone, including the top guy on the roster. Now, Valentine is holding his own against him.
I thought he was more than holding his own. I thought Valentine had more of the offense in this match. And I think it makes, like, negative sense. This match should have been over in two or three moves.
Yeah.
And it's Valentine battering Quake.
Trying to get on the figure four.
Yeah.
And then the big comeback from Earthquake.
That fucking
lucky upstart. Earthquake. And he squashes Greg Valentine with a giant whoopsie at 316. So Greg Valentine, he hasn't done much ever, and he's on the way out. So this is his last pay-per-view appearance. Much like Jimmy Snuka, he'll make up, you know, pay-per-view numbers off pay-per-view for the rest of the year. So thank fucking God the stadium.
Yeah. There's a couple of acts going in this show that I'm very happy to hear of.
Demolition, Valentine, Snuka, Bravo.
Yeah.
So we've gotten out of the early 80s.
Finally. Jesus, yeah.
Any promos for me?
Sean Mooney interviews the Legion of Doom. Animal shouts at the camera for 30 seconds.
Animal says they're not the champs because of Power and Glory, and they're alluding to the tag team battle royal that they had, which the Nasties won, and also cashed in and won earlier in the night. How come the match for the tag team titles is lower in the card than this match?
Yeah.
It's just LOD, bigger stars.
Yeah. And then Hawk actually cuts a semi-decent promo where his punchline is that they're going to turn Power and Glory into sour and gory.
Yeah, why not?
So only LOD get an entrance. Power and Glory look like jobbers and a new plain attire.
They've looked good. Like,
up until now.
This is how cunty the Legion of Doom are. They no-sell a fucking Pearl Harbor. I'm going to attack you when you don't know what's coming, so you can't brace yourself. It's going to full impact to the back of your head, and it doesn't affect you.
So pretty much straight into the Doomsday Device and Legion Doom steamroll, sour and gory. Hercules gets in the ring after the three and hangs on, kind of looks around a bit, and it looks like, for a second, I thought he was going to celebrate with Legion of Doom. You're supposed to be checking on your partner, mate.
He's celebrating, man.
Yes! Got a payday!
Exactly!
Got drinks!
There's actually two points I want to mention in this match. One is that both Roma and Hercules were injured going into this match. Roma had an arm injury and Hercules had a groin tear, so I reckon this was made into a squash match.
Bingo bango.
And the other thing is SummerSlam against the Rockers, Survivor Series. You were in the main event. Royal Rumble, who cares? But man, they've been having a great run since they've been introduced. And this is the end of the solid push for Power and Glory. Thanks, Nasty Boys. This is it. This is who they're going with now. So it's very sad.
Paul Roma does go on to be everyone's favourite horseman member.
And let's see how much longer Hercules can maintain a payday.
We have a promo package of DiBiase and Virgil. So Piper's now involved.
Yes, if you remember, prior to the Royal Rumble, Piper had taken Virgil out for dinner and he's trying to get him to turn face and he was rather unsuccessful. But at the end of the tag match against Dusty and Dustin, Virgil turned face, hitting the Million Dollar Man. They've been gearing up towards a Million Dollar Man versus Virgil match at WrestleMania. So Piper's been training Virgil to be a boxer, apparently. He was like,
I'm not training him to wrestle. You know what I mean?
So it's like, hey, Virgil,
how do you spell man? WrestleMania, DiBiase, you spell man, V-I-R-G-I-L.
try again. And Virgil actually beat Haku in a warm-up match. I suppose Piper has a little bit of boxing acumen because he boxed Mr. T at WrestleMania 2. Mm-hmm. That match that went to the toilet after 30 seconds.
The two of them just instantly gassed out.
So on my version, we straight cut to DiBiase's entrance, without Virgil, obviously. Then Piper's theme hits, and Fink says... He'll be in the corner of Mr. DiBiase's opponent's corner. It's like, either this is a huge botch, or he's got a massive boner for Teddy DiBiase. Is that like he's wearing the boxing robe with opponent written on the back? Piper was in a motorcycle crash, and that's why he's on crutches. Yeah.
In reality, he had hip replacement surgery.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, did you hear Virgil's amazing song?
If Virgil thinks he's playing The Price is Right, The Price is Wrong when you're in there with Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, it was great.
I love
the sound of silence.
I put money on that this is the only time Virgil comes out second in a match. Lap it up, mate.
Yeah,
Virgil actually kind of outperforms DiBiase at the start here. The boxer can out-wrestle the wrestler. Only in wrestling does that logic work.
Yeah.
Like Butterbean versus Barkon in the Brawl for All. Butterbean actually just knocked the shit out of him. It was hilarious. Maybe even Inoki versus Muhammad Ali. That was a bullshit draw.
Yep.
You know, and you know, Money Mayweather versus Big Show at WrestleMania. Mayweather wins. But how did Randy Couture and James Toney do?
It was like 40 seconds.
Yeah, Randy Couture took him down, tapped him
out. Choked that motherfucker out. That's how it goes in real life.
Yeah.
Wrestlers beat strikers in real life.
But not in wrestling. But I suppose maybe Vince is like, Vince Sr. was a boxing promoter, so he's got a hard-on for
Vince
boxers.
Vince loves his boxing, though. He really does, yeah.
Did you hear Piper's top tips shouting in encouraging words from the corner? So you got two of them. Get out of the corner, obviously. And then DiBiase was going to give Virgil a clothesline. Duck. That's what this guy will do for you if you have him in your corner. Absolutely fucking
don't lose. Million Dollar Man had a lovely but very safe pile driver onto Virgil. I was happy with that.
So we get a schmaltz to the outside, and DiBiase pushes an unsuspecting Piper off. It's hilarious. He continues to attack, but the rest goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah. It's been like 4 pay-per-views. God, the relief. DiBiase, he is having none of it, and he just gets in the ring and slaps on the Million Dollar Dream, and then Piper comes to Virgil's aid. And wow, Sherry intervenes on DiBiase's behalf. So, sensational Sherry with Ted DiBiase. That was great. Swings and roundabouts, DiBiase's lost the heel manager, but gained a new one. So at the end, Virgil, who's won by countout, helps Piper get to his feet, and they try gain fan sympathy, and it's rather unsuccessful.
Piper's selling of the knee was so comical that it could only garner boos.
Yeah, there was a bit where Virgil swings a crutch and he hits Dangerous Danny Davis in the balls.
I saw that, yeah. Was that a plan spot?
No.
Ow.
Poor guy.
Yeah, and so Virgil runs off Ted and then talks Piper into doing way more damage to his knee.
Fucking Virgil gets on the mic and get up.
Get up!
What did you think of the match and the payoff?
It just seemed like we have to connect A and B and get it over with, so here you go. Like, Million Dollar Man, a fantastic wrestler, but he can't do much with Virgil. It's quite a throwaway match, I didn't care for it.
It's kind of a shame, because I thought that the build-up, I thought that the Rumble, the post-match spot on the Rumble was phenomenal, and the heat was incredible. I thought that the match was bad. I thought that the finish was appalling. But I was happy that the Million Dollar Man came out trumps with his new manager and would it afford him in the slightest to have let Virgil win.
No, not at all. Should have given the claim. It's like literally nothing on the line and this is the last time you're going to fight.
It wouldn't hurt DiBiase to lose this match in the slightest.
Sure, he's been jobbing out for the last 2 years.
Yeah,
like,
Jesus, yeah.
Overall, really, really shit. No payoff. Virgil ain't going anywhere.
Why, I've gone to WCW in a year.
Ah, my groin!
Sean Mooney introduces a video package for the main event. So here we see that the dastardly heels are burning the flag, aka the Hulkamania t-shirt. Then we see Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan in their cool General Army uniforms.
Did you see that? Sergeant Slaughter's shaving cut at the bottom of his lip.
But she said, oh, fuck's sake.
Look at me, look at me.
So Slaughter says that the leader of the Pukemaniacs and the immortal Puke will not prevail. He teases a bullshit Duggan finish, threatening to keep his belt by DQ or count out. And the announcers say, oh, it's a whole new set of rules. And it's like, no, they're the same rules you've always had.
I thought that was brilliant. The main thing is, not that I win, not that Hogan loses, but that Hogan doesn't get the belt. It's brilliant.
The problem is then when he's in the match, he doesn't really follow through on what he's threatening.
Hard cut to Tito Santana versus the Mountie. Action in progress. And the Mountie's with Jimmy Hart, who is wearing a awesome custom red jacket and a black attire, so a third change of the night.
I think putting the Mountie, who's like your new heel, I think putting him in this spot on the card is an absolute disgrace. Nobody gains from it.
Yeah, there was a sloppy flying forearm spot that was just, oh, it's awful. They just collided in the ring. So we get confusion, and the Mountie uses the cattle prod and pokes Tito in the tummy in the meat basket.
The meat basket?
Yeah, it was about 5 pay-per-views ago. Have you been listening to our podcast?
If you haven't, go fucking back and do it. I'm not going to explain it for you. So Tito is all over him, and then Jimmy Hart uses the shocker. Not the sex one.
What's that one?
The V1...
Yeah, the V1.
The shocker and the bowling ball. Right?
How am I going to splice this?
That's amazing.
Did you hear what Heenan said then? So Tito's doubled over after the shocker, you know? And Heenan says, must have been something he ate. Mexican food.
So the Mountie gets the 3 and the win in a nothing match. Alright, so we go to Mean Gene. He interviews Hulk Beetroot Hogan. Now, he is wearing an Americana...
bandana?
Do-rag. Yeah. They show a week ago, Hogan versus Adnan, Pearl Harbor by Slaughter. And as Adnan holds the belt to taunt Hogan, of course it's fucking Cali upside down.
You know the way all the road agents run in?
Yeah.
Who is Wurzel Gummidge?
It's Jim Bowen in a blonde monk's wig. He like, takes over the whole shot.
Who is this man? I can only look at you when you're on the screen.
That's René Goulet, a retired French wrestler, a Quebecois. Hulk Hogan says the Sergeant Slaughter will be the victim of Twilight's last creaming.
I like that.
Hmm.
For the second time in his career, Hulk Hogan got 180 degrees and 360 degrees mixed up again. Yeah, brother, things were going wrong, and then I did a 360.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
And he turns around, you again.
I used to be proud of my country, but not anymore. Too much freedom. That's what's wrong with this country. Saddam Hussein! I, Sergeant Slaughter, pledge that my career will follow your lofty standard.
The Fink brings out Alex Trebek, Marla Maples and Regis Philbin to the classic WrestleMania theme. So it's time! It's time, finally, match fucking 14. It is the World Wrestling Federation champion, Sergeant Slaughter, with General Adnan versus Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Patriot, the Immortal Puke, with Old Glory. Hit my music. Main event star. Lesnar, the WWF champion, who's previously feuded with such luminaries as Nikolai Volkoff, Jim Duggan, and Tito Santana. Is that not a resume of a fucking mid-carder?
Yeah.
But here we go. Obviously, main event, WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Just prior to WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan went out to military bases.
And went back on his word and didn't join them.
Yeah.
Treason. Like.
So at the start of the match, what's the first gear? Is there anything below first gear?
Reverse.
Neutral.
Off.
So at the start of the match, there was just painful USA chants. Oh god, it's all audio sweetened. And Sarge hilariously complains about a hair pull. Monsoon gets to it before I can. He's like, what hair? Heenan remarks that it doesn't cost any more to complain. And so he's right to do so. Look, I thought it was quite nice actually. He also laments he himself has never managed a world champion. Because remember Andre's title win with the Twin Magic with the Hebners? That was stricken from the record.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So Adnan clubs Hogan with a double axe handle. DQ.
Yeah, was it inside the ring?
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
But like he's working for the DQ.
Main event and rules and shit.
Yeah, they should have said that the ref isn't going to stop it for obvious kind of DQs. All right, then get your wingtip boots out and start booting them in the hole. See how that works. Then Slaughter hits Hogan with a jacketed chair. A few minutes in, Slaughter is completely gassed and the match, it's not going anywhere.
Oh, so I've in massive caps, I'm so fucking bored. This sucks.
This match is just so slow. It's, oh my god. Slaughter is too tired to take a proper turnbuckle spot. And so in one of them, he actually just hits his tummy into the top turnbuckle.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I actually think that really hurt him though, didn't it?
Oh, it's right in the sternum. I'm sure he's even more winded. Like.
Yeah.
This is a highly simplistic match where it's just you do a few moves and I'll lay on the ground. I'll do a few moves, you lay on the ground. There's just no storyline to it. It's just a sequence of very slow moves.
I'd say about two-thirds of the way they finally shoehorn in like a match plot when Slaughter finally starts working on Hogan's back. But that's like 17 minutes into a 22-minute match. Kind of. It's like not enough to even come close to saving it.
Hogan, uncharacteristically for a face, stops at 8 with the punches in the corner and the crowd chant along. It's a bit mean, isn't it?
Yeah.
Multiple trips to the top rope by both wrestlers. Really slow, and it gives both men a chance to rest. Yep, Sarge applies a Boston Crab next to the rope, and Regis Philbin, who's on commentary, correctly postulates, why doesn't Hogan just reach for the rope?
Regis is a man after my own heart. Because he has no time for kayfabe, you know, building tension in the match. And I was like, yep, damn fucking right.
Right there. This makes no sense. You're just allowing him to hurt your lower back.
Yeah, and then I'll grab the rope. When I'm good and ready to grab the rope.
Yeah.
A nasty spot. Slaughter wipes sweat off his brow when he's at the top rope. And he goes, bleh. And Earl actually reacts to it. He's like, I imagine, like, he's sweating profusely and actually got hit by what would tantamount to be a gob in the face.
Nice.
Heenan tries to save the match by quipping that in Iraq, you only count to two and so he should win.
That's brilliant.
And Heenan speaks fluent Iraqi and he said Hogan said he quit.
But I was actually clapping Heenan because it was the only thing that I could really get any joy from in this match was just listening to his quips. Although there was one bit where Slaughter had Hogan in the camel clutch. For some reason, General Adnan gets up on the apron and distracts the referee who misses Hogan quitting. So Adnan causes Slaughter the match for no reason. Like, and even the commentators, like, they all got like, what's this all about?
I suppose maybe they're just trying to put over Slaughter. Like, the Ultimate Warrior did quit as well at the Royal Rumble. And it was only because his legs were underneath the rope that the referee said continue on.
Yeah.
So maybe they're just putting over the finisher for this stupid comedy mid-carder. Again, there was a non-DQ chair shot to Hogan. And for his patriotism and courage, Hogan receives a Crimson Mask. Just out of nowhere, it's like, man, a bit of storyline wouldn't be bad. Blah, 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 blah. Fucking carny.
Because the actual chair shot was really weak. It's
protected by a thick padded 80s jacket.
That's what a varsity jacket, yeah.
Oh, it was really cool looking. Slaughter covers Hogan with the flag, the Iraqi flag, before covering him and only garners a two. It actually looked pretty good because Hogan's blood actually got onto the flag as well.
Nice.
So yeah, that's cool. So Hulk Hogan, incensed, tears the Iraqi flag. Hogan, defacing a foreigner flag, gives him the courage to Hulk up. Isn't that wonderful?
I think we mentioned this in a previous pay-per-view, but that's not okay for Hogan to do that. He's a babyface, loved the world over, and he's ripping up another country's flag. That's not cool.
Yeah, it's just an evil dictator we don't like, not the entire country of Iraq.
Yeah.
Hogan point. Hogan punch. Hogan boot. Hogan leg. Hogan cover. Hogan win. Hogan spotlight. Hulk Hogan is the WWF champion for the third time. And then Monsoon says, as Hulk Hogan celebrates in the ring, and now the war is officially over. Fuck you.
And that's an order.
So Americana wins, and Hulk Hogan has caused peace in the Middle East. Isn't that something?
I do have one good thing about the match, and that is the flag spot when he puts it on him and pins him. Everything else was utter tripe.
Hogan is obviously a fantastic showman. He's maybe not the best wrestler in the world, but he usually puts on a pretty good match.
Mm.
Andre, Savage, Zeus, Warrior, Earthquake. All been exciting in one way or another. Slaughter is so bad that Hogan couldn't pull a good match out of him. You know, I hope they would have gone home and had a cold shower, because you just feel dirty after watching that. Jonas Hogan wipes his face, I think, with an American flag at the end as well. Don't think that's okay either. He had a bit of sweat and he's like, eh. Threw the flag away.
At least he didn't wipe his arse with it. Imagine that. They're red, white and brown.
That would be some heel turn. Yeah, so let's stop this video footage of Hulk Hogan celebrating this monstrosity. Let's go to the aftermath. Do you think they knew, Hogan and Slaughter and Vince, when the match was over, we failed here?
The very fact that they had to move arenas going into the pay-per-view, I think, it was a disaster.
Doesn't really stop Vince thinking, Americana, I'm going to force feed it until you like it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure, he still does.
I still think that's one of the company's biggest problems, even in this day and age. They call themselves an international company, constantly touring the world. They still write to an American audience.
Mm.
They'd be so much bigger if they didn't.
Yeah.
So, Stars and Stripes Forever WrestleMania 7 is in the books. Our books. Episode 22. The biggest audience in the history of pay-per-view.
Potentially.
It drew 400,000 buys, which is lower than the pay-per-view before, pay-per-view afterwards.
Oh,
so it's not even the biggest audience this year. The Rumble got 40,000 more buys, and SummerSlam got 5,000 more buys. So why was this such a colossal failure? Well, there are many reasons. One, the fans turned out in droves with the shameless exploitation of the Gulf War. The audience saw right through this superficial Americana peddling for what it was. It was a cheap cash grab to try to capitalize off a very real war with real debts. The other thing is, from a talent perspective, one, who have you got in the main event? Hogan's Hulkamania has entered year 7 of him being the main event guy. It's a little difficult to keep on plonking down the same amount of cash for the same guy being on top. And Sergeant Slaughter, he was just simply not a draw. He gets heat, it's X-Pac. Change the channel, fuck off, Heat.
Mm.
He was neither a main eventer from a gimmick or an in-ring perspective.
Isn't it really weird that we all knew how bad he was back then? Everybody saw through it. The pay-per-view buy rates prove it. But yet WWE have spun him into a legend.
Slaughter.
Since, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. How
so much
do
heat.
They do this?
The bomb threats. The bomb threats, which is what, 15,000, not over 100,000. Are there 85,000 Americans quivering at home, clutching their TVs? Like,
more people didn't go to Mania 7 than who did go to Mania 3. Like that?
I love it. Yeah, that's very impressive.
Yeah, that's a big crowd.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Post-Mania, there was two feuds on the house show circuit. Hogan and Slaughter and Warrior and Taker. With Warrior and Taker, you know, with a new guy and the guy who failed in the main event, outdrew Hogan and Slaughter. So
yeah.
And of course, number three, which is something that was coming for a while. You know, look at the Bulldog, look at Hogan, look at Macho, look at Warlord, look at Barbarian. Holy shit, Roidy McGrew's up and down the card. And this is coming back to haunt them. They could only get away from like a federal injunction for a couple of years. So the steroid scandal had gained serious momentum, and even before WrestleMania they had like a very public shaming, and just the WWF lost a lot of favour with the public, just completely turned people off the product. Sad days. Oh, we'll expand in real time as WWF get hot under the collar from a federal commissioning body.
Nice.
Are you sad enough about wrestling yet? Because we have a very depressing death toll. Wrestlers who performed on this show who are now dead. 15 dead.
Oh, God.
I'll just go through them. Macho, Liz, Sherry, Andre, Perfect, Bulldog, Bravo, Tornado, Referee Joey Morella, Hawk, Hercules, Earthquake, Crush, Bossman, and Monsoon.
Joey Morella, I didn't know was dead. And Hercules.
Hercules. I did not know he was dead. Yeah, that was the one I didn't know.
15. Actually, it's not too bad. It's a
that is
Joey Morella died of a car crash.
Okay,
not too bad.
And Monsoon would have been pretty old.
Mm. Earthquake, bladder cancer. Bravo was murdered.
Yes.
And Tornado is suicide.
Suicide.
Which is still
that's
connected.
A wrestling death. Yeah. Still, that's totally connected to the business.
Just to make you feel bad about it, might as well. We're in the doldrums right now. Have a guess. How many football players who competed in the 1991 Super Bowl are dead now?
Okay, 15 on this 1991 Super Bowl.
2.
4 and under.
Duck egg. They're all still alive.
Oh, wow.
Fuck.
Wow. You know, that's probably a little bit unusual as well.
Wait, bear in mind, like, they should be all under 50. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, wrestlers don't generally make it to 40.
Let's change this subject, please.
All right, so. Bong. All right, lads, so what did you think of the pay-per-view overall?
I thought this was an above-average show. I've been dreading this for many months because we all know the stories about the dwindling crowds and everything. And, okay, we'll go for the bad first, okay? It was too long. The celebrity involvement this year I thought was bad.
It's more minimal than it has been in previous years, though.
Yes, yeah. There was, like, a couple of death spot matches and lots of dead wrestlers. And some of the good points, I thought the undercard for the most part was enjoyable. I really enjoyed the recap videos. I appreciated it. It was a start of the streak, which is awesome. Warrior's best match ever. I loved the ending to the Macho and Liz saga. And I think for the first time ever, this was the first Mania that looked like a modern Mania, in the sense that there were 3 to 4 main events with a plot and all reason for being there, not just matches thrown together. So, I'd say above average. I'd give this about 7 out of 10.
Lack of matches thrown together. There seemed to be an awful lot of them. Poor booking. Too many matches, obviously. Too many squash matches. To me, it's essentially a one-match pay-per-view. Savage Warrior. Enjoyed the Rockers match. Enjoyed the Warlord Bulldog. Other than that, man.
Well, thank God that this 14-match card, 15 if you're in the live audience, it ends in 1991 and we start reducing and streamlining match numbers from 92 onwards. I was so happy to see Hogan in his death spot that the main event happened 2 hours ago. And there's nothing he can do short of coming out with Liz halfway through the pay-per-view and start shaking their hands.
Oh, my God.
You know, he can't steal the spotlight because he's not...
Could you imagine if he came out when they were hugging and, like, started, you know, made up with Macho and put it across like he was the bigger man and he put it aside? Can you imagine it? I can see steam coming out of your ears, Jay.
Before Liz jumped the guardrail, Hogan ran down.
And pushed
Liz out of the way. And gave Macho a
Macho a chance. Brilliant.
I did mention in the main event when Hogan came out at the start, he was saying something, and all I could think is, he said, "Oh, fuck Macho, man. Taking my spot. I'm going to have to be in the mid card and the main event from now on." And then after Hogan leaves the ring, Triple H comes out. Time for my squash. But all right, let's go to the Wrestling Is
Earthen
segment.
Awesome! Hi, folks. It's Bret the Hitman Hart, making all your wishes come true with Aladdin, the magical family musical.
I am the genie of the lamp.
You've never seen a genie like me before. Uh-oh, that evil magician Abinazir. Time for the sharpshooter. Here's my favorite part of the show, the big dance number. Don't miss Ross Petty's Aladdin. Cheer the hero and boo the villain. Reserve your magic carpet ride today.
Oh, I've been in that lamp so long, I'm bent out of all recognition.
So that will do it for this week, lads. Awesome show.
Yep.
Next time, it's going to be the hottest event of the summer. And do you know what the main event is for SummerSlam 1991?
Nope.
No.
Do you want to know the main event of SummerSlam 91? No. It's quite famous.
No. I'm now entering a period where I'm really hazy up until, like, the Rumble.
All right, so you can see it on the screen. And, yeah, okay. So... if you want to watch all of our episodes in blistering full-screen IMAX flavoured 4:3 goodness, go to oswreview.com and subscribe to us via iTunes at itunes.oswreview.com. So it's a goodbye from Mr. OC.
Rafter.
P1.
Rafter.
P1.
Rafter.
Rafter.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you. Are we thanking anyone? Is there anyone you want to thank?
I'd like to thank you, Jay.
Well, thank you, Steve.
And Steve, do you want to thank Jay as well?
Ah, God, without him, you wouldn't be listening to this, so.
A happy ending.
You can bone me later on, it's grand.
Yeah, you bring the breakfast rolls, you bring the box, Steve. What words were you going to use, Steve?
Well, they're not going to be funny now. I was going to use potato and breakfast roll. And it would have been funny if Steve hadn't ruined it.
I don't think I'd have laughed at that. You see, the whole point is that you're meant to say something that they recognise. If you went to the Congo and started saying breakfast roll, potato, you know,
Scotch Adair is hilarious.
Okay, that's pretty good. But what I meant was, if we went over and were interviewed...
By who?
By your fucking... Oh.
Say it with me. Genie.